Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
From the blackest corners of your mind, they call, pulling you deep into shadow, twisting your senses, keeping you from sleep. It's time to face your darkest fears. This is Tales to Terrify. Good evening, children of the night, and welcome. We're entering the final stretch of our flash fiction contest. If you've been waiting until the last possible minute to get your story in, that time is fast approaching. You've got a little over a week to send us your terrifying tale. If you need a refresher, visit talestoterrify.com/flashcontest, where you can get another look at your muse and find all the details you need to submit. The deadline for entries is midnight, February 28th, so time to get scribbling. We've got one final week of staycation this week, but I promise we'll be headed back on the road soon. For tonight, though, we're going to dive straight into our fiction. We have a double feature for you this evening, children of the night. Two stories from the diabolically disturbing mind of Christy Nogle. Christy Nogle is a member of the Horror Writers Association and Codex Writers Group. She teaches college composition and lives in Boise, Idaho, with her partner Jim and their dogs and cats. You can read her most recent and upcoming stories at Vastarian, Synth, an Anthology of Dark Science Fiction, and Flame Tree Publishing's American Gothic Anthology. You can read more of her work at christynogle.com or follow her on Twitter at Christy Nogle. Links are in the show notes. Children of the Night, join me for Christy Nogle's Portrait of Basil Hallward, a Tales to Terrify original.
I came awake when I was little more than an outline, with no sense organs. Still, I could sense Basil near me, the pressure from his breath and his brush, the lightest touch of his smallest finger. I loved him even then, I think. I came to myself slowly in layers. Fat over lean, I heard Basil thinking, reminding himself of some long-ago edict. Fat over lean. The thin, dark washes of cyan and cobalt built up to thicker, paler dabs of gold and rose. Basil's broad, violent gestures gave way to careful, controlled motions. My eyes, when he made them, caught first on his beautiful roving eyes. They were hazel, pure green at the center, bleeding into tawny, speckled brown, the skin around them lined and bruised with lack of sleep. My nose's first taste was of linseed and turpentine, and then his warm, sweet breath. I loved him. I was sure by then. My mouth he created in loving strokes. He called it in his mind rosy, bright, and young, pink, delicious. He remembered the taste of salt, cream, and honey on his tongue, and I anticipated the same flavors on mine. Yes, my tongue! I felt it growing there behind the painted shut lips, a tongue ready to do so much but still caged. For now, its very being was enough. A miracle, in fact. I began to taste slick teeth and the bony ridge of a palate. Soft, he thought. Sweet. His own mouth came an inch from mine as he worked on something above my face. My hair. He thought it thick and crisp gold. It was almost a taste. He touched me again with his breath. My beloved's breath was sweet with all its animal warmth and its accents of oregano, mint, pepper, basil. My mouth strained toward his, but I could not complete the link. That hateful space held between us. I could not fathom how we never touched. We never touch, even now. He stands before me with love written in his face. His touches are only brief and tentative caresses now. More and more he stands back gazing. This is good too. He gazes and I gaze back. The admiration is mutual. He admires how real I am, which is a mark of how skilled he is. In truth, he worships himself, and I worship him as well, and do not think of myself, though I feel at times new organs forming behind or beneath the slowly drying final layers of oil. Over time, my vision broadens. I am stunned to learn there is more in the world than my Basil. Terrible boy Dorian cries out that he hates me or something along those lines. He resents me. He does not see why I should have something and he should have less. Is he speaking of Basil? I have Basil and he does not? Oh, if that is the case, I am glad. My tongue pushes against the barrier of my lips once more, but it is still too weak. I must listen, try to make sense of this. Three of them speak. They're saying the boy is like me in some way. There is a comparison to be made between us. The third man wants me. Basil wants the boy, and the other man wants the boy. The boy wants me. Basil assures him that yes, he can have me. No, I won't go. I want to cry. But I will go if Basil wishes it. That thing can have my soul, the boy says, or something very like that. Yes, yes, I want it, I think with all my power, and their eyes refocus on me, or Basil's and the boys do. The other man is looking at his fingernails. He says it's time to go. The two keep scanning my face, Basil thinking there's something there. What is it? The boy's thoughts are more opaque, but I read his face. He's unsettled. The other man says again that it's time to go, and though Basil asks, or rather he begs the boy not to leave, the boy leaves. Basil's body slumps when they're gone. The image of me runs over and over in his mind. My hair and mouth and hands. All he needs is to look up at me, but he doesn't look. I feel new dimensions to my hands now and sensitive inner parts growing behind my painted costume. My new fingertips feel him feeling my hair and running his hands down my neck to my naked shoulders, but it's all only in my mind. His shoulders shudder, and I know he is weeping, though he will not show me his face. I belong to the boy. He keeps me under cover, and there I wait, thinking of all the colors in Basil's eyes. I think of the dark hair on his head and face. My fingertips still feel him feeling my hair and skin, but the smell of him is gone. I ruminate on the injustice of it all, which builds anger. And maybe it is the anger that builds strength. All the inner parts of me keep growing behind the paint surface, behind the cover where no one can see. I am moving now, slowly opening up a space. The cover comes off in a sweep. The boy gasps and swoons. I do not know what he sees. Another man comes, and the two of them talk about moving me, and then I know they're doing so because of the rocking motion. All alone in the dusty room for years, I keep Basil sharp in my mind. I rock back and forth, opening up more space. One day I strain out with all my might and touch my nose to the rough, stinking fabric of the cover. After that exertion, I realize I am breathing deeply. I am breathing into lungs for the first time. Air rushes in and out through my nose, since the mouth still will not open. The space between me and the cover grows humid. I rest. I strain again. I rest. The cover comes off in a sweep, and there he is, standing beside the horrible boy. Basil, I knew you would come. I strain forward, thinking this time I will come free and embrace him. But of course that cannot be. Not yet. I move perhaps a fraction of an inch beyond the surface, and he shudders back. He looks away. He's saying terrible things, thinking even worse. He hates me now. Inexplicably, he is disgusted by me, disgusted by the boy, in fear for the boy's soul. But I have the soul, I have it. Basil, don't you remember? He is on his knees, praying, begging the boy to pray. The boy. Oh, and here is why I have always hated this boy. It's because I knew beneath the surface of thought that it would come to this. He moves away, and here he comes, knife in hand. Basil does not hear me scream, "Turn, Basil, now! Rise! Run!" No. Oh, no. I cannot turn away. The boy leaves my cover down all the time he does his evil, and then replaces it to keep me from gazing on my murdered love. Basil was in this room with me for many days. His body bled and stopped, and I felt his spirit rush around unaware of me. It was like having a large, frightened bird loose in the room. I reached for him over and over with my mind, but I could not catch him. I think he could not hear me. I do not know if it was the cover that kept him from me or the prison of the paint itself. I kept on straining, resting, straining. I kept on hoping and calling for Basil, but nothing helped. A man came and took away the body, and all has been quiet since. I suppose his spirit went along with his body. I do not know. I keep working. Months or years have passed, and by now my lips can part. My hands can turn. All at once I feel the fabric on my fingertips. I push against it, brush against it. My touches are too light. More months, more years? I push the thumb and index fingers out so far that they not only brush the fabric, but they're able to grasp it, pinch it tight, tug it down. Two strong tugs and it is finally happening. The curtain falls to the floor in a heap, and I am naked. Naked too, drawn on shoulders at the far end of the room, is Basil. Nothing more than a charcoal sketch against the blighted wall. He shivers and weeps soundlessly, arms crossed and long, beautiful hands caressing his own shoulders. His head is bowed. I did not know you were still here, I say, and he hears me for the first time. His head rises, colorless eyes turn towards me. He touches his mouth, shakes his head. He cannot speak. It seems he cannot send his thoughts to me as he always did before. He is too weak. Come to me, I say, but he cannot. He can hear me, so I tell him all I have to tell him. Most of all, how glad I am to gaze on him again. If I never have anything else in the world, this is enough. I speak to him, and though he cannot answer, the shivering does lessen over time. The arms relax. Something of the old expression comes upon his face, and I am glad. I tell him that though he cannot come to me, one day I will be strong enough to come to him. I am stronger every day. The boy will rush into this room again sometime and look on me in horror. He will reach for the blade he used on Basil. He will try to use it on me, but he will not succeed. My hands. You see now, Basil? My hands are free. I will take the blade from him, turn it on him. You do not think I can do it? Basil smiles, shakes his head. I can do it. And do you want to know what will happen then? I want to say that I will come to him then. I will have the strength to break out of the layers of hard-aged oil and stride across the room, and then what will happen? Will I carry Basil out of this terrible house? How can I separate him from the shadow that holds him? My fantasy makes no sense, but he watches, eyes wide, hoping for something, longing to hear that we are not doomed. Even now, when everything seems so bad. And then suddenly, an inspiration comes, and I think that it is true. I think this is what will happen. I will come free. Once vengeance is done, I will step free. It will be a miracle, but it will happen. I will kneel on the floor beside your murderer and lay these hands into his blood. There on the floor beside him, I will paint your portrait. You are doubtful? Only because you do not know how much I learned from you. I will paint you right here. I know how to do it. And you will wish, and I will wish. Very hard we'll have to wish. Harder than we've ever wished for anything before. That the painting of you can have your soul. And then you will strain like I have strained, only faster, harder. It will have to go fast. You'll strain yourself up off the floor, and you will still be weak, though not so weak as you are now. I will take you in my arms, and I will carry you out of here. I promise. Do you hear me? I promise. I stare at my love as I always do. I try to read his face. Perhaps he should not dare to, but I think he does. I think he believes. My eyes have blinked before, though not so strongly as they blink right now. Tears flow from them for the first time, and I think that I have never felt so clean.
That was Christy Nogle's Portrait of Basil Hallward, as read by Bryce Dolly. Bryce Dolly is new to voiceovers and voice acting, and is excited to jump into it. If you'd like him to record anything for you, he can be found at fiverr.com/awkwardmammal. Thank you, Bryce.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Up next, part two of our double feature of Frightful Fiction from Christy Nogle. You've already heard about Christy, so without further ado, let's dive in to Christy Nogle's Move-In Weekend, a Tales to Terrify original.
Mommy died in 60, and life has been happy for me and Daddy ever since. Can it have been nearly 10 years? Hired women stayed with me whenever Daddy went away on business. He wasn't ever home all that much, but he was always back for Christmas bearing gifts from all around the world. And anyway, absence makes the heart grow fonder, or stops love from spoiling for a little while longer, at least. He hasn't been out of the country in the past 2 years. He's not handsome anymore either, poor Daddy. I've been thinking more often lately, what's going to happen to him? There are still so many arrangements he needs to make before I'm settled at college. He has to check on my tuition and help me shop. He needs to help me unpack and make sure the movers didn't break any of my things. And of course, he needs to drive me and Princess to the apartment tomorrow. He has to worry about the cost of the apartment, too, but he knows I couldn't bear to live in a dormitory without Princess close by. On the way there, I think I'll change my mind about having a car. I'll start to wonder whether it would be such a bad idea after all. Parking will be an expense, but on the other hand, I'll be able to shop. I won't have to call him for every little thing, and I can take Princess to the beach. Daddy worries about her. As soon as he came home tonight, he wondered, what will little Precious do all day while I'm in classes, all night when I'm on dates? Oh, do you really think I'll be asked on any dates, Daddy? He only looks away. He always used to praise my face, but now that I'm grown, it's too much for him. Like looking at the sun, it hurts him. He says, maybe Princess ought to stay at home after all. I'll be lonely enough without you. Daddy worries too much. Some people like to worry, like to suffer. Oh, but I'll be too lonely without you, I say. I pout. Princess wriggles at my feet, and I take her up in my arms, stroke the fawn-colored fluff on her foxy little head. I could crush her in my hands right here and now. I'd like to. I'd like to see it all settle on Daddy, finally. I'd like to make a proper scene. Stop, I tell myself. Put that out of mind. I never get to have that kind of gratification. Funny, other people get to gratify themselves over and over, every day, and sometimes all day. They gorge themselves with whatever they want, whether it's warm kisses or food, cigarettes, sex, liquor. Speaking of, he's looking at the bar cart again. I'm so sorry I forgot to ask, Daddy, I say. Would you like a drink? I don't wait for an answer. I settle Princess on her pillow and rush to fix his drink. I'm mommy in these moments. Well-dressed and shapely, graceful and gracious, a perfect hostess. I take my time putting ice in the glass, measure out everything just as slowly and carefully as if it were a science experiment. My face is beautiful in concentration, and at this distance, safe for Daddy to watch. Mommy died in 60, but her image lives on in me. That's all right. Her image was all she had, anyway. It's certainly all she cared about. I was rotten through and through, but after all, I had all those strawberry gold curls. I wore those ridiculous dresses with the fluffy crinolines, and sat on a blanket in the grass so she could watch me from the window. I haven't thought of that in years. The neighbor at that awful apartment building, what was his name? Sam? He used to come out and bother me while I played. Why'd she let him do that? Daddy smokes and sips his drink. He doesn't try to talk, so I turn on the television. I take Princess to my room so she can watch me get ready for one last night with the girls. I sit down at the vanity, but there's nothing that needs doing. My bob is perfect, my green turtleneck snug enough to flatter, but still sophisticated. There's a 66 Mustang in a used car lot that will pass on the way to college. Convertible, burgundy. I feel like it's going to set me off well. I sit at the vanity, watching my face as I see the car. Surprise, delight, a quiet, oh, Daddy, did you see that? It'll be on his side. He'll look at me, and I'll be looking back at it. We'll be passing it, but we will make a U-turn. Some people like to suffer. Mommy always did. Mary and Joan, my best friends, they like to suffer. We're going to a movie tonight, but before that, we sit drinking milkshakes. We all look so very pretty at the high bistro table, and all of us notice the other patrons approving of us. Joan drones on and on about her sister's wedding. She's so jealous of that sister, I'm amazed she can still breathe.
Mary drones and drones about her mother's ill health. I think how uncalled for all of this is. We're supposed to be celebrating something. The end of childhood, I suppose. And I only said I'd come because I thought it would be a good time. Well, I smile and nod. I think of breaking the rim of my milkshake glass on the table and screwing the shattered glass into Mary's face. The wet vanilla dregs dripping pink with her blood. Why don't we ever talk about my mommy, Mary? Would you like to do that? I see the actions over and over while Mary speaks. The pills in mommy's hand and the quick dash of the thick glass against the formica table. The pressing and screwing motion. I feel it in my hands. I feel it in my back. I taste mommy's lime and grenadine in my throat. Fantasies like this are the closest I get to suffering. Something has to relieve them. I have to have gratification, and then I'll be happy again. I fix things when they're wrong instead of bawling about them. That's the difference between me and other people. "We're about to be late," says Joan with a gesture toward her wristwatch. We hurriedly pay and cross the street, get our tickets to Beyond the Valley of the Dolls at our filthy little hometown theater. We go in late, giggling apologies to the people we step over. Everyone admires us as we go, thinking it strange that girls like us are not in the city on dates tonight. The truth is, we all had to turn down dates so we could have this last time together. I notice, as we are finding our seats, how Joan touches Mary's arm and back. Neither of them ever touch me like that. And as the stupid movie plays, that's all I can think about. I only seem to be laughing along with the silly movie. Really, I'm watching a private movie of my own, a much sharper and funnier one. Mary goes to the ladies' room an hour into the show. I follow her. In my movie, I see her blood dripping down the side of a broken porcelain sink and pooling onto the tile. But no, I do not follow her. She gets back in her seat, finishes her popcorn. Joan gives her a ride home. She'd have given me a ride too, but the night's so nice I want to walk. I take my time putting on my gloves as we say goodnight so that Joan and Mary won't have to be awkward deciding whether or not to give me a goodbye hug. I stop across the street for a bottle of Coke and take a turn into an alley, and a few moments later, I'm strolling down the street towards home. Mary gets home in one piece. That's how much I restrain myself every hour of every day. My new apartment's front windows look out onto the courtyard. Very pretty, with its bougainvillea on the balconies, its Mexican tile, and its little kidney-shaped pool. But the kitchen window looks out onto the side street where my new baby is parked. I walk over to the sink to look down at it every 5 minutes, and Daddy is proud again each time I do. I open the lightest box, and inside is the pink hat box. Daddy says, "I don't know why you'd bring that." "It was Bee's, don't you remember?" "Dear Aunt Bee, Mommy's older sister and only friend. We all used to go ice skating together." "Only that one time, yes, that one time Mommy was sick and stayed home." I laugh a little remembering it. After her accident, I got Bee's hat box with her best hat in it. I still remember that accident, and later, Mommy in a fever destroying that beautiful hat. I still remember the surprise in Bee's face just before her accident. Or during the accident, maybe I should say. I'm holding up the hat box, and Daddy's looking at my face in a strange way. "Oh, what's the matter?" I say. He shakes his head, opens another box. My china kitten is packed in with the towels. He hands the kitten up to me, and I hold it close. That was the very first time I gratified myself. I can barely remember it, though. Mommy told the story to me when I was older, and I had forgotten it most of it by then. It was a neighbor woman who liked me. Spinster women and widows were always wanting to make a pet out of me. She told me I could have this kitten if ever she died, and then she died. I couldn't have been more than 3 or 4. I was stupid. All kids are. Zero control. I'd just gratify myself in the most direct way possible, and then get all hurt if anyone noticed. I laugh thinking of all these old stories, and I set this shiny white kitten on my pretty white mantle. I turn back to get more things out of the packing box, and Daddy's crouched there, pulling out towels, stacking things. My music box sits on the hard wood by his feet. I take the music box to the highboy in my bedroom and stand there, looking over Mommy's jewelry and all of my other best things. A little mother-of-pearl lighter I got from a little boy, a teacher's coral pink lipstick. All of that was before we moved. I can't remember the teacher or the little boy's names, but suddenly I laugh because I remember the upstairs neighbor's name. Not Sam, but Simon. That smelly little old man would come down and bother me when I played, but without warning him in any way one morning, I tiptoed up to the landing and found his door unlocked. How stupid he looked sleeping his drunk sleep, mouth wide open like that. Wide open, just like a jar, so you could pour things right in it. I'm cracking up thinking of it. He came pounding down the stairs later, making a great big fuss, everyone in the apartment staring and shrieking from their windows. And poor old stupid Simon sprawled and crawled across the yard. He was vomiting blood in between the screaming, everyone screaming with him like they felt it too. Simon says, "Scream your absolute head off." That's when I knew for sure that I was different. I could well imagine what it might feel like for my guts to get all poisoned and turn liquid, but there was no connection between that and what it would feel like for Simon's guts to burn away. He was a whole different person from them, and nobody liked him anyway. What were they so upset about? Why were they acting like they were liquefying and dying in the grass? "Oh, Daddy, you're positively green," I say. He's staring at me from the bedroom doorway, swaying, more of an old man than I've ever realized. "Sit down. Let me fix you a drink." The bottles are in a brown paper bag on the kitchen counter, the glasses already arranged on the shelves. I measure everything out carefully, just as if it were a science experiment. Well, maybe it is. Daddy's gotten home in one piece. He just called. I did think about popping something into his drink, and then when we went out to dinner, I thought about pushing him into the street. He slept on my new sofa last night, and I thought about covering his face with a pillow. I thought of an accident in the shower, an accident with the kitchen counter, a problem with his brakes. I thought of the kidney-shaped pool. If I only had a dime for every moment I've devoted over the years to thinking of the sharp edges of ceramic objects, that pool is going to feature in some fantasies to come, I'm sure. I twist myself in knots, thinking it really would be better for Daddy to just die. But then, if I want to take that risk, I want it to be really gratifying. If it's just a matter of killing somebody, well, I'm in the city now. I guess I can kill whomever I want. No, when it's him, I want it to be special. I want him to know what's happening. He made a last comment about Precious Princess just before shuffling out to his car. Shouldn't she really go home with him, where there's a yard and squirrels to chase? And him at home so much, wouldn't I be happier knowing she was safe? Princess is 8 years old now, the longest-lived pet I've ever had. The others were all so accident-prone. We stood in the courtyard when he said all of that, and I was looking up at a marmalade cat deciding whether to jump from one balcony to the other. "Don't worry, Daddy," I wanted to say. "Maybe I'll feel like killing Princess sometime, but I won't do it. I'll go and wring that little kitty's neck instead. It will be all right." I wonder how soon he'll call to tell me about what he read in the paper. He'll read it, surely, as soon as he gets a drink and gets settled. A middle-aged woman was murdered in the alley behind the movie theater night before last, the very night that Mary and Joan and I had our last ladies' date. The night I walked home, I was that close to danger. He'll worry about me, especially tomorrow when he hears some of the more gruesome details of the case. The lady's face. Things that weren't yet described in the paper, but that people will be talking about in town. He'll call again tomorrow when he hears more about it, but he'll call me tonight, I'm sure. I listen for the phone while I get Princess's dinner. Should I go out tonight? There's really nothing here, but I don't feel like walking to a restaurant. I certainly don't feel like driving. That was a stupid idea, the car. I'm never going to drive it. I was thinking I ought to have a car in case Daddy died, but it seems like Daddy's going to be around for a while now. I find I'm afraid. I hate this feeling. I keep thinking of the Coke bottle, how it screwed into the lady's face, how it ought to have been Mary's face instead. Precious stares up at me. "That would have been 1,000 times more gratifying, wouldn't it?" I say. She takes 2 slow steps back when I reach for her. I can't go out. I need to be here for Daddy's call. And so I lie back on the sofa, looking through the pile of textbooks we bought yesterday, and decide I'm not going to like college all that much. The new college clothes are nice anyway. They're hanging already, but I rearrange them. I eat from a tube of saltines. 9 o'clock, and it dawns on me. Daddy's not calling. He's finished the paper, and yet he is not calling to tell me about it. And that can mean only one thing. He knows, just like Mommy knew. Princess licks the back of my hand now. She smells my anger, doesn't she? I get up and set my hair. I haven't worn curls for a while, but I think how they'll look with a scarf and sunglasses when I'm driving around town tomorrow. I'm going to be driving a lot after all, and so I just need the right look for it. Daddy knows, and he wanted free of me, didn't he? He thinks he's safe now that I'm out on my own. He's worried about himself all this time, all these years, and now he thinks he's safe. But I never killed Mommy. She drove herself crazy thinking I would, but I never touched a hair on my sweetest, prettiest Mommy's tender little head. She did it all by herself. I sit at my new vanity, in new satin pajamas, curlers in my hair. Suddenly, the lights go out. Out the window, lights are off across the way. On a nearby roof, the black silhouette of a cat stands tall against gray city sky. Suffering. That's what I've been doing tonight. And for how long?
Dry lightning cracks in the distance. Heat lightning. Princess is smart. She's made herself scarce. I rise to the highboy and pull on my driving gloves. There's something I need to do tonight.
That was Christy Nogle's Move-In Weekend, as read by Sarah Mehra. Sarah Mehra is a native New Yorker who currently resides much closer to the Mason-Dixon line than she ever thought possible. When not spending time with her husband and 2 teenagers, she can be found listening to horror podcasts or doing yoga to de-stress from listening to horror podcasts and living with two teenagers. Thank you, Sarah. Well, children of the night, the hour is late, and we've run out of tales to tell. For now. Tales to Terrify is made possible by the tremendous generosity of our supporters on Patreon and PayPal. If you're not a supporter already, head over to patreon.com/talestoterrify, where you'll find all kinds of perks, from ad-free episodes and bonus content to shoutouts and merch packs. Every dollar helps, and we appreciate it so much. Want another way to support the show that doesn't cost a cent? Head over to Stitcher or Apple Podcasts and leave us a 5-star review. You'll not only put a smile on our faces, but help new listeners discover our terrifying tales. You can share your love of the show out in the world, too, with some Tales to Terrify merch. TalesToTerrify.com/merch will shoot you over to our TeePublic store, where we've got a great collection of creepy, custom, and curated designs that's always growing, so check back often. Tales to Terrify is produced by Seth Williams, Pete Morsellino, Meredith Morgenstern, Julia Zellman, Brian Rollins, and myself, Drew Sebastini, with original theme by Nebulous Entertainment. Tales to Terrify is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivatives license. Join us again next week as we exhume the skeletons in the closet with more Tales to Terrify.
Want to get a chiseled look in the jawline? Sculpt and shape your jawline with added volume from Juvederm Volux XC. Juvederm Volux XC is an injectable gel specifically designed to be robust enough to improve moderate to severe loss of jawline definition. And it is the first and only hyaluronic acid filler approved for the jawline. Add volume to your jawline for a chiseled look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you. Visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.